Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel of VSiN Money Moves will join us, and we will go over the day that was in the NFL. We have our six playoff matchups. We have all the seeding. The regular season is over, so we'll talk to him about that. I'll give you some of my thoughts initially on the games. But first, a quick recap of Sunday in Week 18, and this has become almost a tradition, a weekly occurrence here where we come on right after these games of the year. About a month or so ago, Rams Seahawks recorded right after. Last Sunday, 49ers Bears. And then again on Sunday night, Ravens and the Steelers. The Ravens fall short. They have a 10-point lead, a 10-0 lead. The game goes back and forth, a wild game. And that is not what you expect from both those teams. Likely makes an incredible catch on fourth down. Lamar makes a pretty good throw, but it's not like he was even open. And Likely comes down with it. I thought Baltimore settled too much for a 44-yard field goal. They still had more timeouts. I know you expect your kid to make a 44-yarder, but he's a young kicker. That's not an easy place to play. There's some pressure. I actually I tried to bet it, and I texted one of the group chats. I said, I don't trust this kid at all to make this kick. And the Steelers like plus 550 before the kick, and then it quickly went away before I could bet it. I didn't trust him to make the kick at all, and he was not even close. That's one. And Boswell just missed one, but Boswell – I don't know if it was the wind or he just hit it wrong, and you're going to feel bad for Boswell if the Ravens guy, Loop, made the kick, and you feel bad for Loop and just seeing the look on his face. I mean, I know if it costs you money or whatever, and people say, wow, they're kickers, they got one job, they don't feel bad. It's hard not to feel bad. I mean, what is that flight home like, his offseason? I mean, just think about every day, every minute for a while now, you're going to be thinking about that kick where, well, I got a chance to win the division. I know they probably weren't going to make a run because Lamar clearly limited, couldn't run, only 11 rushing yards, defense. Especially with Hamilton leaving with a concussion. I don't know if they were going to make a run, but that's one as a kicker, man. You miss that with a chance to win the division. That haunts you forever. And sometimes these kickers, I made this before, it's almost like closers in baseball. There's a lot of similarities. You blow a save, you miss a big kick, and it sticks with you forever. You're never the same. Blair Walsh missed the 19-yarder, 20-yarder against Seattle for the Vikings. He was out of the league a couple years later. You've seen it with a lot of kickers, a lot of closers, where they just never recover psychologically. It's a psychological position, so it almost stays in your head for a while. But the Steelers find their way in the playoffs. I mean, it was weird because it wasn't that much of a fun game to watch. It was just, and it seemed like a 10-0. I said, you know, this kind of feels like an insurmountable 10-0 lead. The Ravens were moving the ball. Henry was doing his thing. Steelers weren't doing much. You figure Baltimore was on the verge of delivering a knockout punch, but it ended up being a really good game. Steelers get in. I don't think they're going to make much of a run. And I'll get to these matchups in a minute. I would just say the rest of Week 18 felt like the season was just a week too long. I've been saying for a few weeks now, can't remember a final week where there was already this much decided. The Eagles with a chance at the 2 seed rest their guys, they end up losing, where if they won, they would have gotten it. The Bears lose as well to the Lions. So, I mean, they tried to win, but you know, not a lot going on. It was saved a little bit, at least the early window, by the fact that Saints Falcons had a little juice because Tampa beat Carolina on Saturday, and that left the division up for grabs. And then, you know, Sunday, the 4 o'clock Eastern window, you're playing for seeding, you're watching your bets. But other than that, there really wasn't a lot of drama involved. All of the steam, if you notice, got home to all of the big line movements. These teams that went from, like Denver went from 7.5 to 12.5 to eventually 14.5. Didn't matter. They covered one by 16, even though the Chargers had a chance late to get in the back door. The Vikings got steamed. They covered. You just go down the line. The Patriots, all the line movements ended up being correct, except for actually Baltimore at night. That one did not get home because Baltimore just kept getting bet and bet. Baltimore closed like a 4.5-point favorite, which I was surprised it was 3.5. I didn't see why it was 3.5 and 4.5. I certainly didn't expect it either, but it felt like the season was just a little too long. From an award standpoint, it seems like if I thought that the Rams would rest their guys and maybe Stafford doesn't have a chance to get the bad taste out of owner's mouth, and maybe the market was right. Maybe May was going to win. Never felt like he should be minus 400 or whatever he got to. Now the market seems to think it's going to be Stafford. I seem to think it's going to be Stafford too. He has a big game. I think tiebreaker goes to the fact that he's a veteran. So I actually think Stafford now minus 135 favorite. I would actually bet Stafford. It's not a great price. You're tying up your money. Oh, you're tying up your money for a month or so. I actually think Stafford is going to win. I actually think Stafford's worth a bet. Some of these other guys distance themselves. Smith and Jigba, big favorite for offensive player of the year. Man, I say distance themselves, at least in the eyes of the market, in terms of the odds. McMillan is a big -1100 favorite for offensive rookie of the year. I wouldn't be surprised if Dart won. I really wouldn't. I think he'll probably lose a close vote, but I don't know that he should be, you know, +900 or so, which he is. So we'll see. I would imagine Vrabel gets coach of the year. I don't know that we get any upsets otherwise. Schwesinger, defensive rookie of the year. And kind of go from there. We'll find out the week of the Super Bowl. But the playoff odds before we get to JVT, six games starting on Saturday afternoon. For once, the Texans are not in the Saturday afternoon window. I actually thought they wouldn't be because I thought the Panthers are such an undesirable matchup that you got to put them there. Rams laying 10 to the Panthers. The Rams were laying 10 to the Panthers Thanksgiving weekend, and the Rams went there and lost. And I don't think that'll happen again. I think the Rams win. I think they probably win comfortably. That being said, these double-digit dogs at home in the playoffs, which you rarely get. I remember Seattle that year, Marshawn Lynch had the great run with the Saints were defending champs. They were a big underdog. Yeah, I think they were like a 10-point dog. The Panthers are an outlier in terms of that with the point differential. But anytime you get these huge home playoff dogs, if history is any indication, they usually play close. But for now, it would just be a lean to the Panthers at +10. I can't quite get that. I think the fact, and people point this, well, they beat them already. I think the fact they beat them already is bad for them, because I think the Rams will go in there. Not that any playoff team ever takes any game for granted. And if you look historically, I know it's the double-digit dogs. The couple I can remember usually do pretty well at home. But in general, the big favorites actually do pretty well in the playoffs because they're motivated. Well, the time to fade the favorite is when they're not motivated. They're not focused. Look ahead spot, you know, let down spot. In the playoffs, all the good teams are motivated. Everyone's motivated. So the favorites actually do pretty well. I would lean towards, boy, I'm not betting it right now. Maybe I'll have a play by the time the game starts. Packers -1.5 against the Bears. Bears are a great teaser leg. I think Green Bay probably wins the game. Bills -1.5 against the Jags. I'm surprised the Bills are the favorite. I think the wrong team is probably favored. I think you're looking at a little bit of a tax there with Allen, with the Bills brand name. I think the Jags are a little bit better. I know they don't have much for home field, but I would actually, any 1.5 Jags are a great teaser leg. I actually think that closes closer to a pick 'em. They probably want to get rid of all the teaser liability too. Eagles -3.5 to the 49ers. I don't have a great feel for. You can never go wrong with an under there with Philly just because they play almost like a service academy. Good on defense. Not a lot of big explosive plays on offense. They'll run the ball. 24-20 type of game. I'd probably look towards an under 46.5 there. Patriots -3.5 against the Chargers. I don't trust this Chargers offensive line at all. That being said, you give me Harbaugh and Herbert in a pretty good defense. The 3 and a hook looks pretty good in that one. That's the Sunday night game. And then the final one, Texans at Steelers. One of these teams will be in the final four in the AFC. Texans laying 3. I can't quite get to the Texans laying a full field goal on the road. But the one I do like, and I do think this one will move, under 39.5. I think that'll close 37.5, 37, 38, something like that. I just, these teams are really going to get the 40 points. I know these low totals are hard to stay under with the new landscape of the NFL, and all these kickers can kick, and you get better starting field position, and you're almost always in scoring range. That being said, 39.5 is tempting still to bet the under. Plus, Tomlin and D'Amico Ryans, both defensive-oriented guys, but we can be a little bit conservative, not afraid to punt, not afraid to kick field goals. I think this has 20-17 written all over it, so I do like under there. So I like the under there, leaning to the Chargers +3.5. Eagles 49ers, I like the under there. And we'll have all week to get into these, but before we get to JVT, the five-day stretch from Thursday when you have Miami-Ole Miss college football semifinal, Friday, Oregon-Indiana college football semifinal, and then all weekend with 2 playoff games on Saturday, 3 on Sunday, and then 1 on Monday. That is awesome. I mean, that is just an incredible, what, eight playoff games between college and the NFL, the wraparound weekend. That, man, if you love football, if you love sports, that is as good as any 5-day stretch you're going to see. That is a fun, fun weekend. So enjoy it. These days with football are running out pretty quickly here. Before you know it, you get to these the Saturday a couple weeks from now. And that first Saturday without football, which you have, what, conference championship week, it's a little bit of a wake-up call. But like I was saying the other day, once you get to this point, you're not that far from baseball. You're not that far from March Madness, a little college basketball, some of the conference games. And before you know it, the conference tournaments roll around. So playoffs should be a lot of fun. AFC is about as wide open as I can remember any conferences I've been saying. If I had to pick, I'd still pick the Rams to come out of the NFC. And I want to pick the Chargers. I just don't trust their offensive line. I'll save my official Super Bowl pick. I'm not going to pick anyone yet. I'll think it over a little bit. I'll save it. Because I don't want to just throw out guesses. Seahawks plus 340, short shots, Rams plus 425, Broncos plus 650, Patriots plus 950, Eagles and Bills are 10-1, Texans are 12-1, Jags 14-1, Packers and Bears 22-1, 49ers and Chargers 28-1, Steelers 50-1, the Panthers are 150-1 to win the Super Bowl. So we'll see what JVT thinks. We'll get his thoughts on the playoffs, week 18, everything else. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we're back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him Money Moves, Hardwood Handicapper, Pods of the Future. The list goes on and on. He does a great job on all of them, and he joins us once again. JVT, welcome. Jonathan Von Tobel. The regular season in the NFL is over. Time flies when you're having fun. What's going on, man? Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, like you said, 18 weeks flew by. It seems like just yesterday we were watching the opening night, and now all of a sudden here we are, postseason set. Wild card on paper. Looks like it's going to be a ton of fun, so I'm really looking forward to that. I think I probably say this every year, but I mean, this seems like a wild card I'm really excited for. Like, I haven't seen it. There's a lot of really good matchups. So, quick season, fun season, and now it seems like it's anybody's game.
And the season ends just how it started. Week one, the Ravens blow a game on Sunday night to the Bills, yep. And the season ends with the same way. Now, this wasn't as bad as that loss, but hey, when you have all these back and forth and you set up, I thought they should have gotten a little closer. The announcers didn't really talk about that. I did not trust that kid to make a 44-yarder under pressure. That's a tough building to kick. I mean, that's nitpicking a little bit, but what was your reaction to that and the rest of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think you nitpick anytime somebody fails. You know, you're kicking from the line of scrimmage was at the 26, so it's not the worst thing in the world. Yeah, I feel like essentially if you're a professional, I should be able to ask you to kick a 44-yard field goal, especially in today's day and age when you have all these kickers. I mean, you have the kid from Jacksonville today lining up for a 67-yarder, no problem going into the half. So either way, though, look. You're trusting a kid like that to make a field goal because your defense can't get a stop or stop a nosebleed. The fact that you give up the 26-yard touchdown pass to Austin right prior to that, there's a reason why you're in that position. It was a completely wild game, and I think it was fitting. You know, it's like watching two guys who don't know how to fight just meet in the middle and throw haymakers the whole time. And I would expect that, and I was expecting, no matter who was going to win that game, that their playoff lives are going to be relatively short-lived, and I think that's the case for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I thought maybe a healthy Baltimore could have beaten. I mean, they were going to be home against the Texans, could have beaten Houston. You don't really trust Houston's offense. But that being said, Lamar ran two carries tonight for 11 yards. He just hasn't looked like Lamar all season. Yep. Maybe that's the injury. Maybe that's age catching up to him, which he's not that old. But and then Kyle Hamilton gets hurt, and they just it wasn't their year. I mean, it was not just tonight was a roller coaster, but the last 2 weeks, a week ago, they needed to beat Baltimore. They needed to beat Green Bay in an upset, and they needed Steelers to get upset to set up this game. And I mean, I didn't get why they were a 3.5 and the market loved them up to a 4.5-point favorite. I thought maybe they could win a game. And then once you get in, who knows what the way the AFC is, but I don't think Pittsburgh is very live to do much. Do you have anyone you like to come out of the AFC?
I mean, not entirely. I don't think there's one that I'm like really throwing my hat in the ring and going, I'll take these guys. I think every single one of them, you can make a really strong case that they're going to win the AFC. I think the team that I've come around on more that I think is legitimately dangerous, shocking enough to say, I think this is a safe space. Is Jacksonville good?
Like I'm
kind of, I think Jacksonville might be pretty good. I mean, you look at them like, well, so we don't even have to talk about Trevor Lawrence first. This is one of the better defensive teams in the field right now. Jacksonville heads into the postseason ranking around fifth and expected points added per play by opponents. They're very, very good in a lot of different metrics. Top 10 team in terms of success rate. They're an opportunistic group, one of the better pass defenses in the NFL. I think this group's going to be pretty dangerous starting with the way that they can play defensively. And then on the flip side, look, Trevor Lawrence seems to be getting more comfortable in this offense as it goes along. Cohen's a pretty good play caller. I think this team, with the ability to play at home to start off the postseason, and a system offensively and defensively that I think sets up to travel relatively well, I think that I've come around more on Jacksonville at the very least, well, being somewhat balanced. I mean, you look at some of these teams in the AFC, I don't trust Houston's offense, but their defense is absolutely fantastic. You look at Buffalo, I don't trust their defense, but I do trust their offense. I don't trust Denver's offense. I mean, I said it at one point, we were watching the games at the Westgate today. It was me, Mitch Moss, Matt Eumanns, Doug Kazarian, and I was like, you know, let's not forget, it's very underreported right now, that they were in a 13-3 game with the Chargers that were benching everybody in Trey Lance. That was the Denver Broncos, because Bo Nix couldn't really separate themselves. So I think out of all of these teams, the team that at least looks like it has the most balance is Jacksonville, and I've come around a lot on them.
Did it feel like watching these games today? Did it feel like the NFL is just a week too long today? I don't know. For me, it just felt kind of extra unnecessary. It felt like, sure. I don't know. I mean, it's only 17 to 18, but it's just one more chance for these teams to get separation. The fact that the two seed isn't really something that teams value anymore. It just feels like this new format kind of killed the final week. I know it's not going to be like this every year, but did you get that same feeling?
I mean, kind of, but also I was on the air sweating out at under 19 and a half in the duel between Clayton Tune, JJ McCarthy, and Max Brosmer. So, dude, what an in-game day. I mean, if you were really tracking stuff, I had some in-game stuff on the Houston Texans and the Indianapolis Colts, kind of banking that the Texans would see the writing on the wall with Jacksonville at halftime and pull their dudes, all sorts of stuff. So I think overall you are right. If you kind of get into it from an in-game standpoint, it can be a ton of fun. But, I mean, in terms of games of weight that mattered, there was really nothing going on today. And I think a lot of that does have to do with what you're talking about. I mean, I saw a headline before we came on. Let me see if I can read this, if it's still up here on ESPN.com. Eagles standby rest call despite losing two seed. My response would be, why? Okay, who cares? Like, it's the two seed. I don't get a bye. What am I fighting for? I still get my home playoff game. I mean, I guess maybe I would host in the next round should I move on, but it's not really worth putting your guys out there to potentially lose somebody due to injury. Ask the Packers about what happened to them last year when they were fighting for seeding.
Yeah, and you have to weigh, too. Would you rather play San Francisco or Green Bay?
Right.
And I think there is some value in the two seed, but like you said, it's a risk-reward of what if you get somebody hurt? Because the Philly was the two seed last year, so you get a home game. If you win, you're guaranteed a second home game, and who knows, if you get an upset, if the one seed gets knocked off, which Philly got that benefit last year, you get the whole thing at home. So two is, I think, an advantage over three. It's just, is it worth it? And Philly obviously didn't think so, but I actually thought they'd win the game with McKee. I thought McKee,
me too,
would lead them, and I didn't watch much of it, so I don't even know, you know, how he played. I just had was checking in here and there, so I get it. I can't kill him for it. It is you know, it is just a reflection of how much the NFL has changed now, where, you know, 5 years ago under the old format, the two seed was everything. Now it's just like, eh, you have it, no, we don't want it, and Chicago ends up losing anyway. What awards? We'll start with MVP. Do you think it's going to be Stafford? The market, who knows? The market's all over this place. I've got a feeling they're going to give it to Stafford. What do you think?
Yeah. First off, that was one of the things we were tracking in the afternoon. The awards market is absolutely stupid. You know, and I had people cite the odds to me in the weeks leading up to this as evidence to the point that Drake May was going to win it. And it's like, dude, anytime one of these guys takes a dump, it's going to move like, you know, 20 cents, whatever it is. And so here we are. Look, I think this is not going to be a who I think should win. This is who I think is going to win. And I think it's going to be Stafford. I think these voters, for the most part, are kind of mouth breathers. And they're going to see Matthew Stafford, Hall of Fame career, doesn't have an MVP, led the league in passing, led the league in, you know, total touchdowns or whatever it was, touchdown passes. And against that schedule, I think a lot of them are going to feel pretty safe in voting for him. And I think there's going to be some, and we see this in awards voting all the time. Again, this might sound stupid, but this happens all the time. I think there's going to be voters who think, I have plenty of time in terms of his career to give Drake May an MVP. This is going to be maybe the last time. Matthew Stafford, a guy who usually for the course of his career, I guess you could say, deserves it, which again is stupid. But I think a lot of voters are going to see, you know, 12 wins, 45 plus touchdowns, and go, that's my guy. And I think they're going to give it to him.
Yeah, and it's interesting with the Lifetime Achievement Award, which is something I've brought up since the beginning of the season. It's not like he got robbed in any of these years. It's not like he was close. I think he had one top 10 finish, not like top three or top five. He hasn't been even close. For all the people that are like, oh, he's going to be a Hall of Famer even before he went to the Rams. Like, nah, I mean, he never won a playoff game, and he never even sniffed an MVP at top 10 voting. So, but I'm with you. I think that the fact that he's been around a while, people seem to like him. You know, there's a good narrative there. And like you said, they can give it to May, you know, next year or the year after. So that'll probably factor in. Do you think any of the other favorites should not be? You think we'll get an upset now? McMillan, huge favorite. I mean, we know offensive player of the year, Smith and Jigba.
Yep.
Schlesinger still a big favorite. Defensive rookie of the year. Do you think we get any big upset, including Vrabel, coach of the year?
Yeah, I think it's easy to point to the rookies as those, correct? Because, I mean, it's hard to evaluate rookies as a whole. So both offensive and defensive rookie of the year I think will be pretty interesting. You know, I know I texted you about this. Our boy Carson Schlesinger, the interior linebacker for the Cleveland Browns, has a great year. For those who did not see it, Tom Pelissero releases an executive poll a few weeks back. I think it was on Christmas Eve, so it's a few weeks back. But he sweeps the award in that article. And he's been considered to be the defensive rookie of the year by many in just passing in medium. However, he misses this game, and James Pierce Jr. has a pretty good game for the Atlanta Falcons to wrap up the season against the New Orleans Saints. I think there's a small chance that maybe we get upended there just because, again, I don't know how voters are going to evaluate an interior linebacker for a Browns team that was good defensively, who was just eating up sacks and doing a pretty good, eating up tackles, doing a pretty good job, versus James Pierce Jr., who's going to have the better, sexier numbers, at least in terms of his, I think it's 10.5 sacks to end the year so far. And then same thing for offensive rookie of the year. I mean, again, McMillan's minus 800, but these awards markers have no idea what these voters are thinking at this point right now. And I'm somewhat surprised. I mean, so I kept kind of pounding the drum on this, and I should have followed my own advice. I told this to Mitch last week on Pod to the Futures. A lot of people are going to look at Jackson Dart and just the totality of his numbers and just say, oh, yeah, like that's the rookie of the year, sure. But I would also say Tyler Shuck at 14-1 as it currently stands, I wouldn't say no to that. I love what we're talking about here for MVP and whatnot. These odds and the way they move. 6 hours ago, the market told you Travion Henderson had no shot. Now he's the second choice on the board. It should not work like that. It does not work like that. And I would say taking a flyer on Dart in that range of 8-1 would be at the top of my list if you're going to try to sneak an upset there in that one.
I would love it. I said last week, it feels like, you know, teams can finish one game out. It feels like if the season were one game longer and he had one more good game, he'd be like, he goes from plus 800 to, you know, even money or an odds on favorite. It feels like he's just going to miss by one game. And I still think if life on the line, he probably loses a close race, but I agree. Those markets are probably not reflective of, you know, what anyone's thinking. Cause who knows what these people are thinking?
No, I mean, we don't know. And that's the other part about it too, is, you know, you talk about maybe getting by or barely losing, whatever it is. I think that first off, when we think about these awards in the back of our mind, we always have this as sort of a reference. And so we're thinking, you know, Dustin asked me this today. He's like, well, if you think that's the case, why do you think he fell off in terms of Jackson Dart? And my response was, how do you know he fell off? If I'm a voter and I'm just evaluating these players, we don't know that. Our perception is that he fell off because the awards market said that he fell off. But if I'm somebody who's taking his job or her job seriously, I don't think I'm, you know, the awards markets act like every single day when these teams play, like I have this like board and I'm like, okay, today Jackson Dart's in first. And then, oh, he had a bad day. Let me move him down. No, you're evaluating every single one of these players every single week and then the totality of their resume if you're a voter and taking it seriously. And so I think that Jackson Dart, and let us not forget the bias of being a New York Giant, is probably much more alive than the market is giving him credit for.
It's a great point, and I've had Mike Sando on this podcast, and he's a voter, and he says, I've tried to, you know, glean information from him a couple weeks before the end of the season, and he basically says, you know, basically he does say, you know, I basically look at it at the end of the year. I look at it at the end of the year. I sit down. I don't really think about it that much until the end when I have all the evidence, and then I sit down and I take it very seriously, but I look at it at the end. So if you're you don't get caught up, like you said, you don't get caught up, oh, well, he only had 30 yards against Minnesota, he's done, you know, move him to the back of the line. I don't think it works that way.
And so then, if we're just looking at it in that sense, then I'll just present it to you this way. 14 games, over 2,700 total yards, and 24 touchdowns. That's Jackson Dart.
pretty good.
And a lot of people are, yes, right. And a lot of people are just going to look at that and view it from that prism. And I think that's why we get these instances too. I mean, I always like to invoke it. There's a lot of different awards, but go back to that NL Rookie of the Year race. You know, the betting community just tracked it every single second. And the thought was that Jackson Merrill was going to run away with this, when the reality was, at the end of the year, voters just looked at that and said, dude, this Paul Skeens dude's a stud. He's a star. And he's starting all-star games and doing these. He's going to win it. So, yeah, I think if you zoom out, which is what I think a lot of voters do, instead of looking at every single instance of these games like we do, I think you realize, oh, maybe guys like Dart are going to be a little bit more alive.
Yeah, absolutely. And he beat the Chargers. He beat the Chargers, beat the Eagles. Those are two wins off playoff teams. And then they blew a game to Denver. They blew a game to Chicago. Not really his fault. I knew he threw a pick against
got
Denver.
Hurt in the Chicago game.
Spending too much. And he got hurt in the Chicago game. If he has a couple more wins, I think the record is going to be held against him. But if he had a couple more wins, dude, he probably gets it. But I mean, let's get to these playoffs. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, at the end of the day, if we're comparing these two, he played in three more games. He's got, I think, 10 more total touchdowns than Tyler Shuck. He's got one fewer interception. I mean, I don't think that this is this race that people are making it out to be. And by the way, it does help, at least when you talk about Offensive Rookie of the Year. I don't know if they're voters. I don't know if you played this. You saw this clip. I know I tweeted it out last week with Ben Solak and Mina Kimes mocking people who thought that Tyler Shuck was in the running for Offensive Rookie of the Year. That was a week ago, to which Mina Kimes responded when Benjamin Solak brought it up. Nobody's saying that. So, like, even these voters, like, you have no idea what they're thinking. And there's two potential voters right there that were mocking the thought of Tyler Shuck winning the award.
Yeah, and I would love to go back. I love to go and see a list of the voters, because, you know, Aaron Schatz, who does stuff on VSiN, Mike Sando. I know more than, I don't know, a handful of these voters, but
Shine.
Is he one? Okay, yeah,
he was one last year. I don't know how often it changes, but he was a voter last year. He voted for Darnold for comeback player of the year last year.
Okay, and there's 50 of them, I think, which is different than some of these other sports. But let's just go through the six playoff games. Just a quick, like, minute bullet point thought on each one. Sure. Just sort of instant reaction. Rams laying 10 to the Panthers, total 46.5.
This is easy to draw a line through, I think. I mean, the Panthers are not really a team that I want to run and back to beat the Rams, or should be to stay inside of that big number. Although it was like 7.5 the first time they played, and the Rams pulled away from the Cardinals. But I don't know, man. Their form does not look particularly great. Big revenge spot. Would lean a little bit toward LA, but like I'm not laying 10 here.
Yeah, I believe the stat was Carolina minus 69 in point differential.
Yep.
And that's the third worst ever. And the other two teams actually won playoff games. It was,
I believe it
was the Seahawks team. And I'm trying to think who the other team was.
I have to look it up. I believe they're actually, I don't want to correct you if I'm be wrong. Cause I thought the one that I read had them as the fourth worst point differential. And all three of the others had won the playoff game. But either way, your point stands. Like these teams get in.
I think it was third for a division winner.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of.
That's
the
difference. But do you remember the other two or no?
I know you said it's the Seahawks, and then was there a Saints team in there too? I'll have to look it up.
No, that I don't remember. So you would be what, Rams or pass?
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy game, I think, to scratch off. But yes, Rams or pass.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a tough, like,
yeah, here we go. I got it for you.
Go ahead.
The Panthers had a negative 69 point differential this season, 23rd in the NFL. The only playoff teams with a lower point differential were the 2004 Rams, the 2011 Broncos, and the 2010 Seahawks. Each of the previous three won in the wild card round.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, that was the one, the Broncos in 2011, and they were a division winner because they got a home game. I think that was the Tebow year where they got the walk-off win.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Packers minus 1.5 at Chicago. Saturday night game. They played Saturday night a few weeks ago. Same spread. I thought Chicago would act. I think actually Green Bay, this line went back and forth a couple weeks ago where both teams were favored by 1.5, but Chicago, I think, closed as the favorite in that one. Great teaser leg. What do you have on this one? Packers small favorite, 45.5.
Yeah, I mean, I would lean a little bit here toward the Green Bay Packers, 40 and slip. I think the Chicago Bears are going to be, I think, eventually what we thought they were going to be. They're 16th in point differential. They're 16th in DVOA. They're bottom five in yards allowed per pass and per rush. They've lost three out of their last five games. Like, I just – I think that this team, I mean, even against the Green Bay Packers a second time around, it's a ridiculous victory for them against Green Bay to have all of those things happen for them. I've got this Blackjack Invitational ticket. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they can continue to pull these games out of their ass, but that is not the profile of a team that once you get to the postseason is generally going to have success. To ask the Packers to just win essentially as a 1.5-point favorite, I think seems relatively fair. As much as I don't really like this Packers team a ton, I think that's a fair number for Chicago, excuse me, for Green Bay here in this spot.
Bills -1.5 against the Jags, 51.5. I thought the Jags, I mean, it's either team favored by a point or so. So other than teasers, it doesn't really matter. But for teasers, it does matter. I thought it'd be Jags by a point or so. I think this is a little bit of a markup on Allen. What are your thoughts?
Would completely agree. And I think there's a couple of spots where you're looking at this and you're buying in on Jacksonville. In fact, let me double check, because I think I did put in a teaser leg and tease them up. But as we talked about, too, I mean, this Jacksonville team looks legitimately good. They look like a team that I think is going to be pretty dangerous. They've got all the makings of a group that can make a little bit of a run here in a weak AFC. And I'm with you. We were talking about this over at the Westgate when the numbers were coming out. I thought this was going to be Jacksonville -1.5. And instead, that is not the case. I wanted to make sure here. So I teased the Packers up before this flipped. So I have a Jags +7.5, Packers +7.5 teaser. I think that Jacksonville's the side. I think this number should be the other way around.
I think it'll close around a pick 'em too. I don't think they want the teasers from Jacksonville, because this will probably be a close game. How about 49ers, Eagles? I don't have a great feel for this game. The Eagles laying 3.5, total 46.5. If I could pass one of these, it'd probably be this. What would you say?
I'd lean under the total and lean a little bit toward Philadelphia. I believe in them defensively. That's the one thing I think I know about Philadelphia, is I think defensively they're going to be very, very good. And I think we saw the 49ers, that there's probably an expiration date on the way this team plays on both sides. But specifically, I think this Philadelphia defense is going to be somewhat ready to take them on. What's going to be interesting is obviously how their linebackers play. It's what Shanahan does best. He goes after your linebackers a ton, forces you to go in coverage, forces you to move. And I think the Eagles have the ability to go after that. But very quietly, their run defense has had its issues. But I think overall, I trust what Philly is defensively. And I also trust that this 49ers defense, as we have seen, has its own issues. So lean toward Philly. Would obviously like to see if this gets under that, like, three, like even a 3 flat. The 3.5, I'm a little squeamish, but it would be Philly or nothing.
Yeah, Philly, I mean, you can't go wrong with a Philly under just because they play good defense. It's almost like a service academy on offense where it's just there's not a lot of big plays. They're going to be running the ball, and the clock's going to be moving. Chargers, Patriots laying 30, Patriots laying 3.5, total 45.5. I don't trust the Chargers offensive line. I think that is almost a non-starter for them making a run. That being said, they've got Harbaugh, they've got Herbert, they've got a pretty good defense. I mean, they're live from that perspective. I would only look to take it, but haven't bet it yet. How about you?
I mean, my question would be, I would agree with you. I don't trust the offensive line. Are the Patriots a team that can pressure them? Because, I mean, look, Justin Herbert's been very, very good under pressure throughout this entire season, and it's almost been masterful the way that he has been playing. Now, you would say, well, you can't really keep that up, but when he's been under pressure so far this year, which has been 42% of his dropbacks, which is an insane amount, 6.8 yards per attempt, 10 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, and I think the most impressive part about it, a turnover-worthy play rate of just 2.9%. He's been very good. It's almost like he's been under pressure so much that he actually understands how to play with it, and it's almost become second nature to him. He's played really well this year, and I think they're a little underrated. And I'm, to me, all of this said, it's going to be L.A. I think we saw that this New England Patriots team is a little bit more limited when they ran into Buffalo and they blew that lead and their defense could do nothing against Buffalo. And I think we see a similar case here. Barring any weather, I think this could be a higher scoring game, but I trust Chargers defensively and I trust Herbert here. So give me LA.
This one I do have a play on. Steelers, Texans. Texans laying 3 on the road to Pittsburgh. I can't get to that number, but I'm not dying to take it with Pittsburgh either. I bet under 39.5. Yeah. I think this closes. I mean, maybe a point or two, 37.5, which are key numbers. And once the lower you get, the more key it is. I like the under. I just think this is a 20-17 type of game. What do you say?
I would agree. I don't know how you feel, but I think the jury's still out on this Texans offense, man. Like, a couple of weeks ago, they averaged less than 5 yards of play against the Raiders. They're still scuffling here and there. Had some moments in the first half against the Colts, but still couldn't finish those drives. They were just kicking field goals the whole time against Indianapolis in the first half, specifically with CJ Stroud out there. I don't know if I'm trusting this team entirely, but I do trust them defensively, and I don't trust old man Rodgers. Against a defense like this, I'm sorry, but like the six-yard average depth of target is not going to get it done against a defense that just flies to the football the way that Houston does. So I think under the total, I think a Steelers under a team total as well would be worth looking at too. This looks like it could be an ugly low-scoring game, and then again, with this time of year, weather permitting too, as this game's going to be out in Pittsburgh.
Last couple, who's in the Super Bowl?
I'll go with the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Los Angeles Rams.
Okay, a rematch of a London game pretty early in the season now that the Rams put it on them. But you could basically ask any answer. You can give me any answer, I believe it.
Dude, I mean, that too. But imagine after that game if I told you, hey, like Jacksonville's got a legitimate shot. They look like they might be the best team in the AFC. After that game, you'd be like, what the hell are we talking about?
And I think that was a Travis Hunter kind of coming out party. I remember I used to bet him a lot on props just because, you know, they traded all this stuff to get him. They're going to force feed him the ball. And that day he actually had a lot of targets, a lot of catches, and he got hurt shortly after. All right, last one. Anything we should be betting NBA in terms of awards or futures? Boy, last time I had you on, we were talking about Thunder and they looking good to break the record. They just, man, that fell apart quickly. They lose again on Sunday night, but I don't know. You take the floor, anything NBA-wise?
Yeah, I think I point to a couple of things. First off, the train has kind of passed on the best of the number here. Having said that, I think he deserves to be the favorite if you're not adverse to shorter numbers. Keontae George is continuing to rise up the odds board. He's now 5-1 to win Most Improved Player of the Year. I've got him at 20-1 and then another a little bit more at 14-1. He's been incredible. And the best part about this, Will, is there are many, many NBA media members who are already outright calling him the Most Improved Player of the season. So he's still at 5-1 behind Denny Avdia and Jalen Johnson. I don't think there's really a question right now that he should be the favorite considering his status amongst NBA media members who vote for this. So keep that in mind as well. And this is going to be a great basketball season once again. We will have another winter, I think, of Rudy Gobert. Chet Holmgren should not be minus 220 to be Defensive Player of the Year. He's not the defensive driver for Oklahoma City. Every number points to Hartenstein actually being the guy that makes their defense go and really improves it. Meanwhile, Rudy Gobert, when he is on the floor, the dramatic difference for the Minnesota Timberwolves in terms of the minutes when Rudy Gobert is on the floor defensively versus when he is off, they are one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA without Rudy Gobert on the floor. And when he is on the floor, they are the best defensive team in the NBA. This is happening again. The numbers, if you want them, when he's off the court, a defensive rating of 123.9, that is in the sixth percentile of NBA lineups. When Rudy Gobert is on the floor, that defensive rating goes from the sixth percentile to the 92nd. They give up 108.4. He's 12-1. I've got him at 50, and I would still recommend even more on him because I think that he's going to start to shoot up these boards again.
Good one. JVT, you're the best, man. Appreciate the time. Where can we find you?
JVT up on X. Let's see, Pod to the Futures, Money Moves, and I'm on Sundays as well, so just check it all out.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday. See you then.